It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, sponsored by Trenton Interiors. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue goes deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Tonight's show on ESPN 97.7 is also brought to you by National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Brennan Dodge, Dairy Queen, Delta Broadband, Walpole Tire, and Fairway Carts. Now here's your host for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Jonathan Ford.
And I'm not Jonathan Ford. This is Jason Jones filling in on Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7. I'm joined by Matt Valcho. Our title sponsor is Trenton Interiors. Go see Julie Mays, Britt Choate, David Hedgepeth at the historic Rogers Furniture Building. Trenton Interiors, I was just in there last week. They got some really cool looking stuff for your anything that you need inside your home. I really love some of their kitchen stuff that they had going on. Go check it out there on Trenton Street in downtown Ruston. I'm joined by Matt Valcho. John Tabor's here with us. We're going to have Cyrus Smith from Underdog Dynasty on at 6:30, talk a little bit about some of the coaching hires in Conference USA, specifically FIU, FAU. Cyrus is an FAU writer.
So Conference USA got a lot more interesting.
A heck of a lot more interesting. And one thing I wanted to bring up here in this first segment, I was on the Conference USA message board this afternoon, and some of the fans were kind of discussing who the cross-divisional opponents for the next couple of seasons were going to be. And Louisiana Tech the last couple of years had a pretty sorry draw having to play Middle Tennessee and West Kentucky the last couple of years and taking losses on the road this year at Middle Tennessee and the year before at Western Kentucky. So you think, okay, well, it's going to bounce back in Tech's favor. Well,
you would hope.
I'm thinking the way it kind of is shaping up, I'm thinking you're going to see FAU, Marshall, and Charlotte. I don't think Tech's played any of those in a regular season game before. Maybe FAU, I can't remember. But what I'm hoping is
Tech's never played Charlotte.
Yeah.
Very new.
And Marshall, they've only played in the championship game 2 years ago.
Yeah.
FAU, there might have been one game in there. I can't remember. But what I'm hoping is those are the three. I don't want to see Old Dominion in there because they are definitely on the upswing. Now, Charlotte's on the upswing,
really,
too. Charlotte's on the upswing, too. Don't get me wrong. But Old Dominion could be a power in the East for the next couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be a lot nicer to not have to face Old Dominion.
Old Dominion's taken that spot from Marshall, who it's kind of fallen off very recently. Charlotte on the up and up, more or less. I mean, reaching 6-6 and being close. Or did they? I don't think Charlotte did. They were close. They're 5-7.
They had a chance, I think.
It was that game against UTSA where they had the shot at going bowl eligible.
Well, and they had a shot. They had Rice beaten the week before.
Oh, yeah.
And
I mean,
that's what lost them the bowl eligibility. So Charlotte's not there yet, but they're getting there.
I mean, they are getting there, definitely.
Some of these schedules are starting to leak out. We'll see here probably, I would guess, in the next week who Tech's going to be facing from the Eastern Division, but be looking probably at Marshall, Charlotte, FAU. Hopefully not Old Dominion.
And we'll see the return of UAB.
On the west side, yes. And that should be, you would think, a cupcake, even though they're touting their recruiting class for their team that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
But you got to imagine it's going to take a couple of years for them to be competitive. So, you know, I think Tech would welcome UAB on the schedule the next couple of years. That would be not a give me, but a much easier game.
It was essentially a death penalty. I mean, you look back at SMU and the what is now known as the death penalty and losing the scholarships and the suspension of football activities for a year.
It was a self-imposed.
I mean, it's
crazy.
I mean, I hate to say it, but they essentially shot themselves in the foot. It's because you're going to have to try to come back from not having football for a year, which any of their big name guys that they might have had, unless they were extremely loyal, jump ship and went to a different school to finish out their collegiate careers. But I mean, poor UAB.
Yeah, and it's almost like maybe they had to do it. They had to have that staring down contest with the Board of Trustees to try to get something going on a new stadium, to try to get some kind of respect in the state for their football program. It's almost like they had to do it. But yeah, man, they really on the field set themselves back because they were really starting to play well that last season. Now, talking about the coaching changes in the conference. We'll talk to Cyrus Smith from Underdog Dynasty at 6:30, but got a couple of new hires in Florida, and we'll talk to him about those big names. I was kind of surprised. Two of the teams that did not make a change, Rice with David Bailiff, and Marshall with Doc Holliday, they were, and even out at UTEP, those coaches were getting the most heat. You would think at least one or two of those guys would get fired, but does that say at Rice and at UTEP, they really just don't care as much about football? Now, Marshall, we know they care, but they're giving Holliday another chance.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised at that.
Smart, honestly, because, I mean, you've seen what Marshall is possible with Doc Holliday. I mean, they've done really well. They've won a Conference USA title. It's definitely just an off year. I mean, almost every team has that one year that'll kind of stick in everybody's minds as, oh man, we should have done better or something like that. And it'll kind of ruffle everybody's feathers or scare the recruits, and everybody kind of goes into crisis mode. And sometimes you pull the trigger a little bit too soon. But yeah, in this case, I mean, credit to Marshall for keeping Doc Holliday. And they could be back on the up and up.
They could definitely come back. And you're right. Consistency is key with these head football coaches. If you're changing coaches every 2 or 3 years, it's really hard to ever get back going again.
And we're seeing that with LSU, though, especially this year. And the sports company, they were talking about it just a couple minutes before we got on the air. LSU is struggling with recruiting. All these guys are decommitting or considering LSU and not going to Baton Rouge. It has a direct impact, especially, I mean, not that Orgeron's not a good recruiter or anything like that, but the uncertainty and the changing of an offense and all those kind of uncertainty
can kill you. And you can also hold on too long, like at Rice. Bailiff was doing really good for a long time, but maybe it was time for Rice to make a move. We'll see if he can bounce back, because they were awful this year. Can he get Rice back to where he had him in the Conference USA championship game just in 2013? Can Bailiff get them back, or has he lost it? We'll see. Speaking of also these coaching hires, you know, Skip Holtz is up for a contract extension at some point. And last year, the new coach at North Texas, Seth Luttrell, the new coach at Texas San Antonio, Frank Wilson, they get contracts in the 800 to 833,000 range. I think one was 810, one was 833. Right up there near the top of the conference, right behind Bailiff. Now these two new Florida hires, they're sitting around 1 million per year. And a lot of the assistants, coaches' salary pools in the conference at the top, you know, Louisiana Tech, UTEP, a couple others were paying their assistants a combined $1.2 million. Well, now the Florida schools have upped that. They're around $1.6, $1.7. So it's going to be interesting to see. This is four new coaches in the last 2 years that are getting paid $800,000 or more. And then your more successful coaches, like at Louisiana Tech and Middle Tennessee, are getting paid way less than that. So the teams that are actually winning the conference, will they pay their coaches as much as some of these schools? Or is it just a fact that San Antonio and Denton, which is in Dallas-Fort Worth, and the two teams in South Florida, are they just in a bigger market? Can they afford to pay more?
I mean, that is the question. But to compete, you have to dish out the money eventually. Unless, I mean, you could play the card that, I mean, you pay for an up-and-up guy. He's kind of brand new, but he does really well. And then he gets poached by a big program.
Yeah, he's gone after 3 years.
And, I mean, you can afford to pay the up-and-coming guy because he's not going to require a lot of money. 2 or 3 years later, he gets that big contract at the next level, and then you go and try to find that next guy that you can afford.
And it's going to keep happening with your assistants, too. So,
yeah.
You know, Skip Holtz has seen his offensive coordinator leave last year. He lost his defensive coordinator.
Two seasons ago.
Yeah, so can he keep losing assistants, or can they raise that salary pool enough to keep some of these guys on his staff and keep that continuity going, because they've had three really good years in a row, and obviously he wants to kind of keep that train rolling. Something else that happened, you know, Louisiana Tech related last night, Kenneth Dixon scores his first touchdown in the NFL. Had some pretty solid stats. They threw the ball to him 11 times. They just had not very much success rushing the ball. He was 11 carries, 39 yards. So, okay, 3.5 yards per carry, but Terrence West was 2 for 2, and that was it. They did not rush the ball very well against the Patriots. They had to throw it. So they throw it to Dixon. They targeted him 11 times, the high on the team by far. He caught 8 passes, 42 yards and a touchdown. And I just retweeted an article today. You know, one of the fan sites for the Ravens was saying, hey, is Kenneth Dixon the future face of the franchise? I mean, hey, hold your horses. Maybe they're pushing it a little too far.
Yeah, that is but sort of a reach right now. But, I mean, could it happen? It wouldn't surprise me. But going back to the 11 targets, that's pretty typical of what we expect coming from Kenneth Dixon after watching him for
Yeah, that's why they drafted him, because he was so versatile.
Oh, yeah. No, and a lot of his big plays in a highlight reel that you could pick out of Kenneth Dixon, you look in most of them, a pretty good chunk of them are passes. I mean, screen passes out of the backfield. I mean, that's where his first NFL touchdown came from, I mean, within the 10-yard line. And that's where he thrives. So it wouldn't, whenever I saw him score, it was just absolutely no surprise that would be where his first touchdown comes from.
Well, let's go ahead and go to a break. We haven't even talked about Louisiana Tech in the Armed Forces Bowl yet, or the Army-Navy game this past weekend, so we'll get into that. You're listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7. Got a little STP going on in the background, a little old school stuff. We're sponsored by Trent Interiors in downtown Ruston. You can find them in the historic Rogers Furniture Building. Go see Julie, Britt, or David for all your interior design needs. I'm Jason Jones, joined by Matt Valcho. We're talking a little bit about Louisiana Tech football. I just was listening to that Brister's commercial. You know, last week I had smoked rib and cheddar, smoked cheddar, pulled rib meat, smoked cheddar on sourdough 2 days in a row. My wife was like, the second day, I was like, hey, I'm going.
That is my exact go-to.
Oh, it's the best. I told my wife, I said, hey, we're going to Brister's. I'm going to go get rib and cheese, and she's like, you had that yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So disappointed whenever they run out of pulled rib.
Oh,
it's worst, because I'll call in an order and they'll say, oh, we're out of pulled rib. And I want to hang up the phone at that point.
You got to get that early in the week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You got to get it early in the week. But yes, Brister's is one of our great sponsors, and they contribute to my high blood pressure, I'm sure, and my cholesterol, but I don't care. I love it.
Oh, well, you can join us on the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline and text line 888-993-7762. That is 888-993-7762. This past weekend, the only college football game on TV, Army-Navy, America's game. And
I tried to watch it like a little bit the first half, and then I tried to turn it on in the second half. But with Navy missing two of their key offensive players, it was
a bad looking game.
It was just
a close game. I mean, you can't say that it wasn't a close game, but unfortunately, based on what everybody saw this weekend, it's hard to say that Louisiana Tech is playing a top 25 team in Navy, even though technically the number will still be there by their name.
Yeah, they're not changing. Since nobody else is playing, they're not changing the rankings. They're not going to have another poll come out. So Navy will still be technically the number 25 team in the country, and I guarantee you we will hear that a lot. But
technically.
Hey, great. They did not look very good. Now, should Tech say, hey, no problem, Navy's down, easy win. No, of course not. But
can't overlook Navy.
You can't at all. And they're going to be disciplined. You know, you always hear that when you play the service academies. And, you know, Tech's 0-4 against the service academies, what, in the last 7 or 8 years. I was at the Army game both in Dallas and up in West Point. You know, the Tech played Navy here in Ruston and out in Maryland. And I'm pretty sure Tech went 0-4. I had to go back and look. I know they lost at least three of those. And we'll see. I mean, Tech's got a chance to put up some big offensive numbers here. Navy's defense is not great, but can the Tech defense figure out a different kind of offense, and can they step up to the challenge and say, hey, we're tired of losing. We've lost two in a row. We've got to win this one.
The difference here is that leading up to the game on December 23rd, Navy and their quarterback, Zach Abbey, they're going to have more time in that offense. That was a one-week kind of thing. Didn't really expect to have to use their, third or fourth string guy. Not a lot of prep time. Army was prepared because, I mean, whenever you play a team every year with an extremely similar offense, it's easy to prepare for that kind of a game. So you can't overlook Navy because they'll have time to prep. They'll have a contingency plan in place ready to combat the high-flying offense that Louisiana Tech has. And you can only hope that Tech has the same idea and prepares for anything. Because, I mean, don't put it past Navy that they're kind of backed into a corner with that third or fourth string guy. So they're going to be prepared to do anything.
I don't expect them to come out chunking the ball. I mean, all they can do is just try to run more and execute their offense better than they have the last couple of weeks.
You would hope they don't come out chunking the ball. Yeah. Zach Abbey was 6 for 10, 89 yards passing, averaging 9 yards of completion, no touchdowns and 2 interceptions. And watching the highlights of that game, that some of those passes were just, I mean, not very good, especially one interception in particular. He was practically throwing it into triple coverage.
Well,
it turned into double whenever I think one of the guys tripped, but it was he overshot his receiver into double coverage, and Army easily grabbed that one.
Well, Tech's 2-0 under Skip Holtz in bowl games. I expect Tech, you know, I think Tech's the favorite now. That line has just flipped tremendously because of Navy's injuries, but Tech should be 3-0 in bowl games under Skip Holtz. This is a perfect situation. You know, Tech coming off 2 losses, they needed a win, didn't need to be playing a team that had a high-powered offense. You didn't want to see that coming back in again. You know, this is a chance for Tech to kind of end the season on a good note for the third year in a row and get some momentum going into recruiting. And I just think it's a good weekend. You know, Tech's 3 years in a row going to a game that's 4 or 5 hours away. You can get to it. You know, the fan base can get to it. It's in a great location for the fans. So, really good situation. I can't wait to get over there and eat at Joe T's. I think they're having a big thing the night before, and I won't make it for that. So, after the game, I guarantee you I'll be eating there. I love that place. Great place to take the kids. Really fun. But, you know, Fort Worth's really cool. You know, it'll be fun to just kind of hang out there before you head back home and open your presents.
Both teams coming off 2 losses. Navy against Temple in the American Championship game, and then Army. Louisiana Tech, of course, losing their last 2 games against Southern Miss and Western Kentucky. Both teams will be looking to get that sour taste out of their mouths.
But you know what, too? I mean, history won't look back and say, hey, Tech beat some team because they lost these people injuries or they lost their chance. They're going to look back
history
and say,
hey,
Tech beat the top 25 team.
Yeah. History doesn't have those.
And a great program in Navy. Yeah.
Little asterisks by it with the complete rundown. You just see the numbers and you immediately think, oh, that's the top 25 team.
You know, a couple years from now when the recruits are looking at the info and you say, hey, yeah, Tech beat Illinois in a bowl. They won the New Orleans Bowl. Now they beat a top 25 team in a bowl. That's just more info that looks good for the university. So, you know, you're not going to look back and say, well, but nobody will know that. Nobody remember that. No. So that's going to be really cool. You know, I feel like, you know, Tech's got a chance to get in here and get this win. And really, I said positive momentum for recruiting, but also just for next season. I mean, getting a lot of practice time. Last time we had Skip Holtz on, he talked about all the practice time for these younger guys that have been working hard all season, but not really getting to see the field that much. So now they get to get out there and practice these last week or two, going into the game, then, you know, heading into spring football. You got a whole new quarterback. You know, you got to try to figure out how to replace Trent Taylor, got to replace a few linemen. You know, so get some of that momentum going. And I just think, you know, with Jamar Smith coming in at quarterback, you know, the offense, I don't think will miss a beat. I think they've got a chance to really take off. And so you really want to start next season on a positive with this bowl game.
Yeah. I'm looking at the stats from Army-Navy, and Zach Abbey had the longest run of the game. I mean, he can't be overlooked. That's a given for, like we said earlier, that you can't overlook Navy. Zach Abbey, 19 carries in that triple option, 73 yards, 2 touchdowns, and his long was 41 yards. And I watched the highlight of that. He was really agile, and he was dodging tackles here and there, and a spin move, and a good juke there at the goal line to power in at the almost got pulled down at the 1, but was able to get in there. So, I mean, Navy, they are technically still 25. They were up there higher before they lost to Temple a couple spots, but
it's not like they're a bad team.
No, their
offense just took a severe
hit.
Yeah,
anybody that suffers the amount of injuries that they've suffered is going to look a little bit different than it did at the beginning of the season. So it's not like Navy's a bad team or anything. They are 9-4 for a reason. They are at one point, I mean, technically still in the top 25, but they were a top 25 team for a reason. They were in contention for an Access Bowl for a reason. I mean, they're definitely a good team, and you can't overlook that.
Well, and if you look at the participation chart for Tech football in that championship game against Western Kentucky, you see a lot of younger guys getting on the field. Garner and Mason, you know, at defensive tackle. You know, Kadarian Mason's going to be a big-time player, you know, going forward. But, you know, guys that have been backups at the end, Emmanuel Turner and Edarga got in the game, you know.
We were talking about
Daryl Lewis,
this.
Michael Rodriguez, you know, Colin Scott at linebacker has got a really good future. Aaron Robertson could be one of your starting corners next year. So just getting those guys on the field, you do lose some of these senior transfers. So these younger guys are going to get to play not only in this Western Kentucky game, they'll get to play in this Navy game. So you're just already getting a jump start.
No, we were talking about it last week, too. That was probably Higgins' most complete, most balanced passing performance of the season against Western Kentucky. What was it, 8 receivers or 9? 9 guys catching a ball.
Probably about 12 if you count the Western Kentucky players, though. So he did also have his worst game of the year.
Well, that's true.
And that was their eventual undoing.
8 guys getting a catch for Louisiana Tech. Carlos, Trent, Cam McKnight, Connor Smith, Rashid Bonnet, Jared Kraft out of the backfield, Boston Scott out of the backfield, and Tarzan. I mean, that's 8 guys catching a pass.
And most of those guys are coming back. I mean,
I mean, from that list, I mean, you're losing Connor Smith and Trent Taylor, but Jared Kraft and Boston Scott still be doing things out of the backfield. Tarzan will get a healthier share of the passing now that that spot will be opened up. Carlos, I mean, you have to assume he's coming back, bar some crazy announcement that he's going to enter the NFL draft. I mean, it looks good, and you know you have a guy like Jamar Smith waiting in the wings who has proven himself, will have more time with the offense, and will be better prepared for an upcoming season that includes a visit from Mississippi State. I mean,
And you've got a South Alabama game, too. So, I mean, a potential for some nice opponents next year. We'll see, like we talked about in the last segment, who comes over from the Eastern Division. But it should be a really good schedule. And you know, the future is definitely bright, and I think this is kind of kicking it off, this bowl game. You know, when we come back, we're going to talk to Cyrus Smith from Underdog Dynasty, talk a little bit more about Conference USA and some of the new coaches we'll see on the sidelines next season. You're listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7. We're back on Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7. I'm Jason Jones, joined by Matt Valcho. Our title sponsor is Trenton Interiors. Go see Julie Mays, Britt Choate, David Hedgepeth inside the historic Rogers Furniture Building in downtown Ruston. Matt, we've got a couple other sponsors.
Dairy Queen, Brennan Dodge National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Walpole Tire, Delta Broadband Solutions, Brister Smokehouse, and Ideal Portable Buildings. But joining us on the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline and text line, Cyrus Jones from
Cyrus Smith.
I'm thinking of your name. I'm really bad at names. I did that last week too. Cyrus, how are you?
I'm fine. I thought I was gentlemen tonight.
Doing good, and I guess that's a good question, Cyrus. I'm always getting that kind of stuff happening with my last name Jones. I'm sure you get it with Smith too.
It's a common last name.
Maybe we got to come up with a more. kind of off the wall last name or something. Change my name.
Yeah,
to
that's always.
Gosh.
Hey, all right. So big news down there in Boca. You got a pretty big personality coming down there.
Yes, Lane Kiffin. To say the least, everyone down in Boca is extremely shocked. Extremely. None of us thought that the Boca administration were able to get this done, but. Fortunately, they were able to overlook the buyout clauses on Lane Kiffin's side and wrap him up and send him in Boca.
So what do you think, after hearing the news, that really led to the decision for, I mean, on Lane Kiffin's side and on FAU's side?
Well, I think for FAU's side, after three straight years of 3-9 seasons with Charlie Partridge, who was a South Florida native from Plantation, and he really changed the outlook of the program from when he inherited from Carl Pelini. Once they let him go, a lot of that really was predicated on what FIU did earlier in the season when they fired Ron Turner and they brought in Butch Davis. That really shifted the attention to FAU and the South media or the South Florida market. And you know, with FAU and FIU both under the shadow of Miami, no one really wanted to be overlooked. So it was really imperative that FAU made a splashy hire. And fortunately, they were able to do so with Lane Kiffin. None of us really thought it would be possible, but I guess, you know, big thanks to our rivals for stepping up to Annie and hiring Butch Davis to push the FAU administration into a corner where they had to make a competitive move to stay in the race.
And that was my next question. You know, did FIU hiring Butch Davis, a big name, force FAU's hand and force them to try to up the ante and go after a big name? And my other question was, when everybody thought Lane Kiffin was going to go to Houston or go to LSU to be an offensive coordinator, what other names were in the mix for FAU?
Well, there were rumors circling around that former FIU head coach Mario Cristobal was in the running to be the guy, which is who I initially wanted for FIU to hire. He had a pretty nice run at FIU before being fired, probably unruly by Pete Garcia for a poor 3-9 season in the Sun Belt. But he really took the FIU program and built it up from scratch. So from my perspective, I really thought that Cristobal would have a good shot. And then former Miami interim head coach from last year, and he's a really, really, really highly respected recruiting coordinator for Tennessee, Larry Scott. He also interviewed for the job. So there was rumors between those two getting the position if we weren't being able to land Lane Kiffin.
Now, give me your take on how recruiting in the state of Florida is going to go now that you've got Jim McElwain, Jimbo Fisher, Charlie Strong at USF now, Scott Frost at UCF, Kiffin, Davis, and Mark Richt, all in that state of Florida trying to get the same players.
It is going to be, I don't know if you guys like wrestling at all, but it's going to be a royal rumble, to use the truth.
Oh, you've definitely called the right station. Everybody here loves wrestling.
It's going to be a royal rumble for these Florida prospects. I mean, the FAU and FIU and, you know, the group of five schools in the state of Florida, they're probably not going to reel any recruits away from, you know, the Florida States and Miami's and you have you, but the out-of-state Power Five schools who really rely on recruiting, they're going to have a really, really difficult, hard time because you have Butch Davis, who's a really well-established name in the South Florida area due to his time in Miami and even his time at North Carolina. And then you have, of course, Lane Kiffin, big name, coming in, who's really, really highly respected, aside from his head coaching pedigree at Tennessee and USC. And then Charlie Strong, another big name. I mean, with Louisville, he had Teddy Bridgewater, which was a Miami prospect. He really, really, really built his inroads as a coach, as a Florida defensive coordinator, and now back at USF, his old stomping ground, he's going to flourish. Scott Frost, even though he's an outsider from Oregon, he has that glitz and glamour from Oregon's up-tempo offense in Central Florida, which is one of the biggest schools in the nation, and they're going to be growing. And it's just going to be, it's really, really going to be entertaining to watch these next few years, granted that these coaches stay in place, because it's really going to be great to see a lot of Florida prospects staying in the state of Florida.
Yeah, you mentioned Larry Scott. He's a former assistant at USF under Skip Holt, so I was interested to see when his name popped up, if he got that job. But, you know, something we were talking about in the first segment, you know, I saw on the Conference USA message board, certain fans were talking about who's going to play who in the cross-divisional matchups next year, and I truly expect Louisiana Tech and FAU will be on each other's schedule this coming year.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that with the conference scheduling, we haven't really seen too many, you know, glamour from the East and West glamour matchups. This past year, we had Southern Miss and Marshall, but unfortunately, both programs were a bit down, and what they've been really, competition's been hoping is one grand matchup, like Western Kentucky, Louisiana Tech from this year, from both divisions where they can get a rematch. And that helped this year with Western Kentucky and Louisiana Tech playing earlier in the season and garnering much anticipated interest for the rematch, which ended up producing, you know, great numbers for the school, for both schools and the league itself. So hopefully FAU and Louisiana Tech would be a really nice matchup. I saw that the other day that Louisiana Tech just clipped an FAU accredited JUCO lineman. So hopefully, you know, there's going to be a much interest regarding the game this year or next year.
Now, the introduction of these big-name coaches, obviously, it brings some headlines. But from the actual personnel and team side, how long do you think it will take before these two teams, FIU and FAU, kind of start to show what's expected of them?
Well, for FAU, we're expecting immediate results. Charlie Partridge, for all his mistakes that he's committed on the field as far as coaching and not being able to finish games, he was amazing on the recruiting trail. Consistently throughout his past 3 years, he's brought in the top classes, one of the top classes in Conference USA, rivaling Marshall and just South Louisiana Tech, as well as, you know, rising UTSA. And the roster is loaded with talent. He should be able to win immediately, given the fact that he has Devin Singletary, who was all freshman honors in Conference USA, Gregory Howell, who's an experienced running back, Driscoll, which you guys would know, the younger brother. Everyone is really expecting him to come in and win immediately as far as on FAU side. For FIU, they're a bit of a much longer rebuild, but there's talent on that side too. Ron Turner himself, he really underachieved running that program. He did clean it up, but they've been recruiting just as well as FAU, and being in South Florida where it's an abundance of talent, FIU is not in shortage of any talent. Well, now,
and FIU is really solid on defense too, so you at least have that kind of a foundation to build from. But yeah, Charlie Partridge, he was, you know, before he was the head coach down there, he was an assistant at Arkansas in our neck of the woods, and he was known as one of the top recruiting assistants in the country. And I'm sure he'll find a job somewhere as a lead recruiter for a major conference team. Now, we talked about these bigger names at FAU and FIU. What'd you think about the hire at Western Kentucky? They go for a younger guy. I think he's like 33. And yeah, he's been at some really big name schools like Stanford and Notre Dame, but Notre Dame's offense didn't exactly light it up this year.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of an odd move. I was hoping that, honestly, that they would promote Tony Levan, their offense coordinator, who used to be the Houston coach before Herman came through. And given the transition that Western Kentucky had undergone over the past few years, I was thinking they would go that route. But hiring the Notre Dame guy was really a curious move. He hasn't really been a head coach before. Like you said before, Notre Dame's offense wasn't necessarily setting the road on fire this year. But I guess they're hoping his inroads in Ohio and Indiana for recruiting for Western Kentucky would be open up, will be able to open up a recruiting pipeline for the Cops, because now that a lot of the prospects before were coming out of Florida, that's probably going to dry up, like we mentioned before, given the top-notch coaches that are now in the state.
Yeah, so do you think that's really going to have a big effect? Western Kentucky and Marshall playing bowl games down there in Florida, recruiting Florida. You think the doors are going to be shut to the P5 schools, not P5, I'm sorry, the G5 schools, like in the Conference USA Eastern Division? Are you going to see Old Dominion and Marshall and Western Kentucky get shut out of the state?
I think so. I think within about 2 years, you'd be hard-pressed to see any of those schools, group of five schools for that matter, not just in Conference USA, but all across the board, getting any prospects from the Sunshine State, because like we mentioned before, I mean, Butch Davis, Lane Kiffin, Charlie Strong, Scott Frost, well, those guys aren't only going to take schools from, or take prospects away from the group of five schools, but they're also going to take prospects away from your West Virginias of the world, your Marylands, who also rely on Florida, the Sunshine State, to get players.
Now, if you're looking at kind of stepping away from Conference USA, but if you're looking at coaching, the coaching carousel in general, going from a group of five school to a power five school, which hire sticks out most to you? And then of all those group of five schools that had to replace a coach, which one is the best?
I think out of the Tom Herman move really set the dominoes, set everything going on. With him moving to Texas, it really upped the ante for Lane Kiffin to want to get out of leave Alabama and become the head coach at Houston. And even though he didn't get an opportunity there, I firmly believe that probably rubbed Nick Saban the wrong way and forced his hand to make him, or to convince himself that he needed to get out of Tuscaloosa. And even though I don't believe that he thought he would end up in Boca, it worked out really well for us. And I guess we're on his side too, being the fact that he really wanted a head coaching job. What was the other question? I'm sorry, I forgot the second
group of five schools that are now essentially replacing coaches, which hire sticks out the most to you?
I thought the hire with Temple was really interesting from the get. A newbie, relatively newbie in that area, Job Collins from Florida. They were looking at Conference USA's Bobby Wilder from Old Dominion to fill up that position. And thankfully, for the sake of the continuity in Conference USA, Wilder decided to stay and get an extension. But that was a pretty strange move. Jeff Collins was a former defensive coordinator at FIU. He was just a former defensive coordinator at Mississippi State and, just from now from Florida. He's really, really been on the South a lot. Being in the Northeast, that's going to be really, really interesting to see how he does there.
Yeah, it's kind of weird seeing a guy like that go up to Temple, and then the guy that was at Temple, who has Northeast ties and a Penn State graduate, going down and taking a job at Baylor. So kind of weird guys going out of their kind of territories. But Houston surprised me. I really thought Lane Kiffin was going to get that job. I even thought Sonny Dykes, former Louisiana Tech coach, was going to get a shot at the Houston job. And then they ended up just interviewing their two coordinators and hiring Major Applewhite. So
what a name.
Yeah, what a great name, Baton Rouge native. But Houston just kind of settled to me. They could have gone and got a bigger name. But, hey, it's to FAU's benefit. They got one of the biggest names out there.
Yeah. I really thought Sonny Dykes would actually leave Cal. He did a really good job with Louisiana Tech, but he seems like a strange fit out in Berkeley. And his offense, even though it's picking off, he hasn't really been able to figure out the defensive side of the ball there. And given that he's a Texas native and a legend, or his father's a legend in Lubbock, I really thought that would be a perfect move for him to escape the Cal situation and go to Houston. But I guess that they really wanted to, like you said, hold in the continuity and bring in the recruiting class that they still have, which is pretty highly ranked, and keep Herman from poaching those guys from Houston to Austin.
Now, the rumor is going around right now that whenever Houston had considered Lane Kiffin, is that some reference calls to USC and Tennessee and the connections that were still there from Kiffin's time at those two programs kind of pushed Houston back a little bit and made them really look at Major Applewhite. A personality like Lane Kiffin, how do you see that fitting in at FAU?
Fortunately, we've had a pretty big name in Howard Schnellenberger coming through as the originator, the father of the program. So fortunately, there's some experience there. But, I mean, to be honest, it's going to be new. The recognition from ESPN guys is coming in Boca Raton, not for, the NFL meetings that happen there in the summer, but for actually FAU football. It's going to be quite interesting. Lane Kiffin definitely, as you just mentioned, really left Tennessee in a bad position. USC burned some bridges. And, he can very well do the same and play him out here and then just get another premier offense coordinator job. So hopefully it works out well for FAU, for both parties, really.
Well, Cyrus, we really appreciate you coming on, giving us some insight with these new coaching hires over there on the eastern side of Conference USA. I look forward to catching up with all the Conference USA bowl games as bowl season is about to kick off. Just have a good week and happy bowl season.
Thank you. You too. I'm pulling for you guys in the bowl game against Navy. Represent Conference USA well, guys.
Hopefully the Bulldogs can pull it through. That was Cyrus Smith from UnderdogDynasty.com.
Cyrus Smith. I'm going to get
Cyrus Smith.
My name recognition is just awful. I did that last week too, and I'm still red.
We'll just write it down for you next time.
Yeah.
But this is Bleed Tape Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tape Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7. I'm Jason Jones, joined by Matt Valtro. Call us at 888-993-7762. That's 888-99-ESPN2. Our title sponsor is Trenton Interiors in the historic Rogers Furniture Building in downtown Ruston. Go see them for all your interior design needs.
Well, that is the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline and text line that Jason just gave. Give us a call. Give us your opinion on all of the coaching changes that Conference USA has experienced, as well as Louisiana Tech basketball, football, anything that's on your mind.
And, you know, the Duncan Dawes just recently tipped off against Prairie View. We'll try to get you some updates for the remainder of the show. Speaking about Louisiana Tech basketball, you know, the Tech is coming off a loss to the Dirty Cajuns down there in Lafayette.
It always hurts.
91-83.
Losses always hurt.
You know, we got the news this week that Kedar Davis is out for the season. Really hurts Tech's depth. Eric McCree has been playing really well. He's playing at a high level. He was named Player of the Week again. He had 23 points and 11 rebounds against the Cajuns. And Boykins was lighting it up. 7 out of 10 from 3, had 21 points. But nobody else really was scoring a whole lot. Bracey took 15 shots to get up to 13 points. But Tech just was not – I don't know. They shot 55% and 40% from 3 and still lost by 8. They were playing eight men. You know, we saw Washington get a few minutes, but he only got 9 minutes. It's not like he was playing a lot.
McCree out there for 40, nearly 39 minutes.
Yeah,
earned the Louisiana Writers Sports Writers Association Player of the Week for the second year in a row.
Second week in a row, yeah. And
man, I'm bad at that. Man, yeah, 10 of 15 from the field for McCree. 23 points. I mean, he is definitely showing why he is the leader of this team now that Hamilton's gone.
But, you know, you've got some minutes issues there now with Kedar going out, because he's a guy that was going to go out there and guard one of their best players and kind of hurt your versatility a little bit, because now, you know, you're playing 8 people against the Cajuns and you don't have a whole lot of depth at guard, so you got to play, you know, Gene and Bracey and Boykins a lot of minutes, and you finally get Jalen Harris back. But, you know, Boykins is going to play a lot at that small forward, you know, the 3 position. And then inside, of course, you got Sherman McCree, and Janai White got 21 minutes off the bench and had 8 points and 2 blocks. But, you know, at that power forward position now, you've got Washington only played 9 minutes. But one of your top recruits this season was Oliver Powell. You know, will we start seeing him get in the game a little bit more? 6'8", 220, out of the Dallas area, you know, Rowlett, Texas, over there on the east side of Dallas. You know,
you would hope so.
You would hope he'd start earning some minutes.
Playing only 8 guys a game for an entire season is just – that can't be smart. Maybe Conkle's just trying to work him in and getting practice time, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's just preparing the team for conference schedule, which is essentially what really matters whenever you look at Conference USA, because of the winning the tournament gets you into the big dance, regular season title. I mean, gets you into the NIT, but with Tech's out of conference schedule, there's absolutely no chance that even if they had gone undefeated out of conference that they would get an at-large look in the big dance.
No, you'd have to get to 30 wins with that
schedule. That has to be it.
You know, there's a chance here tonight with Prairie View. You've got Grambling State over in Shreveport. And then next Tuesday night, Florida Gulf Coast comes to town, which is one of the better non-conference games on the schedule. And then LSU Shreveport 2 days later in the TAC. You know, that's 4 games you've got to get some of these younger guys some experience before you get into conference play. Southern Miss on January 1st.
LSUS should probably be the biggest opportunity for a lot of the younger guys to get extended minutes. But
there's really just a shortfall of players off the bench right now, because you're playing with 12 players instead of the 13 scholarship limit. And then Pemberton's out from an injury in high school. He's redshirting. So you're really playing with 11. And now with Kedar out, you're playing with 10. So, you know, it's imperative that the guys that he does have, you know, they come out and produce, because he needs them.
I mean, it's tough. And looking at the score currently in the Thomas Assembly Center, Prairie View 13, Louisiana Tech 10. 10 minutes gone in the first half. So Louisiana Tech down by 3 halfway through the first half. I mean, is this just a kind of a sign of how things are going for Louisiana Tech? It's just maybe they can't get anything going.
I think Tech's just starting off slow, but I still don't think Tech loses this game, and I don't think they win by single digits. I think Tech still gets the blowout. We'll keep track of the game, but
just updated all the stats because they're halfway through the first half. All the stats are out there. Boykins 6 points, 2 for 4 from the field. McCree with 5 rebounds leading in for Tech, and Bracey with 3 assists and only 1 turnover so far in the game.
Looking at the Massey ratings for Conference USA basketball, it's kind of a tale of the haves and have-nots. The last couple of years, it's always been like this. You got about 7 teams that are good or decent at basketball, and then you've got 5 or 6 that are just awful. And so, you know, rounding out the bottom, it looks like 6 teams. You've, of course, got the Florida Twins, Florida Atlantic, Florida International. You got the Texas Twins, Texas San Antonio, and North Texas. Those 4 teams, both football and basketball, have been in good markets, and they have not produced at football or basketball. And again, this year, they're at the bottom. But what's surprising to me is, and Southern Miss is just awful at basketball. They're at 500 in the country right now. There's only like 360 Division I teams. So Southern Miss is horrible in basketball. They're down there. But what's surprising, UTEP's down there. Tim Floyd has a dumpster fire going on. Everybody's wanting to transfer out of there. Nobody wants to play for the guy, former, you know, Louisiana Tech guy, and also has ties to Southern Miss. He's out there at UTEP, you know, supposed to be bringing in these national recruits because he's been an NBA head coach with the Bulls and down in New Orleans, and it's just not working out for him at UTEP. I wonder how long Tim Floyd's going to be around. But at the top of the conference, you've got the usual suspects. Middle Tennessee's having a great year at 9-1. Old Dominion's up there. Rice and Marshall, surprisingly, are a lot better than people thought. You know, Marshall, you know, has the alumni coach, you know, the brother of the famous NBA coach, D'Antoni. Dan D'Antoni's there, the brother of Mike. He's got Marshall on the uptick. Rice, though, at 7-2, they've got 2 really good scores from last year, but they're kind of taking that next step up. UAB is going to be good. You know, UAB and Tech don't have great records right now, but they're playing decent enough opponents on the road, at least in Louisiana Tech's case, to get that RPI up there a little bit. Charlotte at 6-3 has got a decent record. Western Kentucky's kind of in the middle of the conference right now at 4-5, but they've got a rebuilding year. They lost a lot off of last year's team. So it really looks like, you know, Middle Tennessee is going to be the team to beat. Old Dominion out in the East as well, and Marshall's going to give them a run. But in the West, you know, can Tech keep pace with Rice and UAB?
You know, I mean, you never know. It's we won't really know until conference actually starts, because depending on the I guess severity of a team's out of conference schedule, I mean, you don't really get a good read on a team until they're really facing their peers in a conference. Yeah. So it'll take a little bit of time before we know who's going to be a top dog. And I say top dog because I'm hoping it's Tech. Yeah. But anyway,
you know, I think too in college basketball, guard play is so important. And, you know, we were just starting to see how good Jalen Harris was before he got hurt. Now he's back. Bracey and Gene are playing great. I really think with these 3 young guards, Tech can go really far, you know, and you've got the big guys up front, the veterans, Omar Sherman and Eric McCree. And if Boykins is shooting like he has been the last week, I mean, Tech's going to be right back up there at the top of the conference. I feel really strongly about that. Their issue is going to be minutes. You can't have any more injuries. You know, the 10th guy on the roster right now is Deshaun Robinson. He did not play well last year at all and has barely gotten in the game this year. So, you know, if Powell doesn't get minutes, I mean, there really is only 8 other players. So, I mean, Powell's that 9th guy. You've got to see him get some minutes at the 4. And the next question is Washington strictly a 4? Can he play some at the 3 to try to spell some of these other guys? Because they just don't have enough bodies.
And at the end of this non-conference schedule, you're probably going to see that experimentation and the moving of bodies and everybody getting a different shot at a different position, because you got to find what works with who you have, and really only having 9 consistently playing guys, if you throw Powell into the mix, it's going to be tough down the stretch, especially whenever you're playing a Thursday game and then a Saturday game whenever a conference rolls around. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And
those guards will be running a lot. Good thing that they're really young.
Oh yeah, good thing that they're young and they're willing and ready to get out there and do things. And just seeing the emergence of Jalen Harris and Daquan Bracey, it's really a testament to Conkle's recruiting and finding those guys that went through the cracks. Whenever we come back, we'll keep talking a little bit more about La Tech basketball. I'll give you another score update in case you're not listening. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on 97.7.
you're not alone tonight. You're here with us.
Good.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7. I'm Jason Jones, joined by Matt Valcho and John Tabor. We're sponsored by Trenton Interiors in downtown Ruston. Go see Julie, Britt, or David for all your interior design needs. And you can call us on the Fairway Cards hotline, 888-993-7762. Matt, give us a few more of our sponsors.
We've got Dairy Queen, Brennan Dodge, National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Walpole Tire, Delta Broadband Solutions, Brister's Smokehouse, and Ideal Portable Buildings.
So, Matt, it sounds like ticket sales are going pretty good for Tech. You know, I saw a couple of screenshots of North Texas in the Heart of Dallas Bowl a few years ago, and then I saw screenshots of the Louisiana Tech crowd at the Heart of Dallas Bowl. You know, I was at both that game in 2014. I was also at the Army game in 2013 in the Cotton Bowl. You know, Tech travels pretty well to the Metroplex, and, you know, I'm not saying Tech's got a following like a Big 12 or SEC team by any means, but, you know, for a G5 team, Group of Five team, Tech has a pretty good following, and they will travel over there, especially with Tech having their two biggest fan bases, you know, alumni groups in the Metroplex as well as Shreveport, which is not too far away. Have you seen anything on the ticket sales, and does it look like Tech's, you know, going to bring a pretty good crowd over there to Fort Worth?
Based on what I've found, the Times is saying in an article from it's the USA Today Network. It's on the Shreveport Times website, but of course it's written by Sean Isabella from the News Star. It's pretty much on par with everything that we've seen the past couple years. On that first day, I was out there at the TAC getting one of the 100 free student tickets, and there was a pretty healthy line there at 8 a.m. for students to get their line. But based on what Sean has written here, is about 30-40% of the allocation to Tech has been sold so far, and that was in the first week of ticket sales. So that's going to get bigger, and more people will obviously buy tickets as the game approaches. But being on par with what New Orleans and the Heart of Dallas had the past couple years, I mean, like we've been saying, it should expect a pretty good turnout from the Tech faithful. Plus, the pretty decent sized alumni base over there in the Metroplex.
Yeah, I saw something today showing the TV viewership of the last five Conference USA championship games, and the two highest ones were the ones that Tech participated in. Even going back to the 2012 game, I think it was Tulsa against UCF, you know, that one was not viewed as much as either one that Tech played in, whether it was against Marshall 2 years ago or Western Kentucky this year. So, I mean, I think, you know, Tech does have fans that will watch on TV, but also that will travel to these bowl games, and we've seen it. I mean, Tech had a good following down in New Orleans last year and also in Dallas 2 years ago. And, you know, I think it's just great for Tech to be able to go to another one that's drivable, but also not the same one, you know, a different one. So that next year, if the Heart of Dallas Bowl lines up, you know, you're not having to talk about going there for the third time in 4 years. Now, you know, if it comes up again, hey, yeah, great, let's do it. We hadn't been there in 3 years.
Oh, yeah. No, and that's a challenge that Conference USA teams just face in general. That's how things fall for Group of Five teams, because looking at the bowl schedule, I mean, the American Conference winner, Temple, is playing a 6-6 Wake Forest team. I mean, that's not exactly the...
Which, that team was almost in Shreveport.
I mean, it's not exactly the most glamorous of matchups, especially whenever you've got the 10 wins that Temple has. You expect to play at least a better... I mean, of course, you're not going to be playing the guys who...
Yeah,
have earned their trip to like the Citrus Bowl, like a Louisville or whatever. But I mean,
I think like
better.
Navy and Tech and Western Kentucky versus Memphis, that's two games. Conference USA against the American, that, you know, are good teams. And so, but yeah, you don't want it to be where the Western Division is always like, okay, well, we got to go back to the New Orleans Bowl, we got to go back to the Heart of Dallas Bowl. And on the East side, every year they're all fighting over who's going to the Boca Bowl because they don't want to have to go
To Bahamas, or Hawaii, or that's part of the process, is especially for Tech and Southern Miss, you're looking at what is it? It's that that problem that you face, whether or not you want to stay local and get more of your fans to be able to attend the game and bring a big crowd, or I mean, do you go further away and possibly face a better opponent, or in the case of Bahamas or Hawaii, do you put the players over the fans and give those players and some of their family members a Christmas holiday season to remember it at the beach? I mean, it's
and I will say that Poinsettia Bowl, you know, a few years ago was a good matchup. You know, you get to play a TCU team that was back then one of the top Group of Five teams.
Look at them now.
And Big 12. Look at them now. But, yeah, Tech played them within 7 points. It was a good game. And I think Tech, you know, really showed out well on national TV. And I think even though there was a loss, it was a good experience. And Tech, you know, really, I think really came out looking good from that game. So, you know, I wouldn't mind Tech going on a bowl game, even if next year they did have to, say, go to Boca and they ship Tech over to the east side just to get a different bowl game. You know, if you're playing a team like a Memphis, it wouldn't be a bad deal.
No.
Yeah, but you don't want to get stuck playing Hawaii at Hawaii, or you don't want to go to the Bahamas and have to play a six-win team or anything like that. So, and so far, Tech's come out really well in these ball games.
Yeah, no, and the issue this year that actually helped a lot of teams was that a lot of these Power Five conferences didn't have their allotment of schools. So a lot of at-larges, I put quotes around at-larges just because it's not like the NCAA tournament in basketball or whatever. But
5 and 7
teams. Yeah, you've got these 5 and 7 teams who are making it in on APR or an above-average group of five school playing an above-average Power Fives. I mean, it gets confusing and convoluted, but, I mean, like we've said before, those bowl projections mean jack squat. But it was still kind of interesting to see how everything fell out, especially considering the amount of teams that weren't able to make it. And then you get those rumors like, oh, Tech's going to Las Vegas to play San Diego State or Houston or yeah, something. And I mean, and even that would not have been a bad matchup.
That would have been
all
a great
Houston,
matchup.
Houston and San Diego State are both great. And, of course, they're playing each other now in the Las Vegas Bowl. But both those teams, very above average, excellent group of five schools that Tech normally doesn't get the chance to play.
Well, and yeah, as you're playing somebody that, you know, is going to be looked at nationally as a good matchup, and so Tech would have a chance to make a little noise. You're going to a bowl that people have heard of, and so I thought that would have been a great one. So yeah, if in the future years that one pops up again, you know, I'd love it for Tech to be able to go play in the Las Vegas Bowl as a change of pace.
I mean, tie-ins keep that from happening very often, but You have to kind of on the down low cheer against all the big name schools and hope that, yeah, maybe they don't actually get into the bowl that they're supposed to, or they don't meet their allotment, so that us guys at the bottom can
that kinda... One's on a Saturday afternoon at 2:30 on ABC on network television. So
that's a great matchup.
That would have been a good one.
It
would have
been
to
a fun one, but.
Well, hey, we're going to go to a little bit of an early break. We'll come back and wrap this show up. This is Blue Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7. Welcome back to Blue Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7. I'm Jason Jones, joined by Matt Valcho. Our title sponsor is Trenton Interiors. Matt, how can fans get in contact with us?
The Fairway Carts of Minden hotline and text line. That is 888-993-7762. Final segment of this show. Looks like
the Duncan Dogs are on 11-0 run.
Yeah, that's they're I don't know what. Well, I say that. It's 28-25 right now, a minute left in the first half. Still kind of playing it close. Don't really expect that very often from Louisiana Tech, but I don't know. Basketball is in a weird place right now, and out of conference schedule, you just kind of have to let it play its course.
And I said it a couple weeks ago. I mean, I feel like Tech's got a good schedule for this team. You've got such a young group. You need to build some wins, build some confidence, and then next year when most of these guys are coming back, you do lose Eric McCree, but everybody else is coming back. You know, that's when you beef up the schedule a little bit. We've got our weekly phone call. Maybe this is our weekly phone call from Rafe, and we'll talk a little more basketball with him. But, you know, next year you beef up the schedule. You've got Tech's gonna be loaded next year. You got all these new recruits coming in, and you only lose McCree. You know, I feel like Tech's gonna put together a great season next year, and that's when you add a little bit to the schedule and give them a chance to have a better RPI.
Oh yeah, no. Another kind of a score update. It just changed. Tech pulling away, 25-31. Let's see. I'm trying to follow the Twitter account. 11-0 run last or 4 minutes ago. McCree now the top scorer so far with 10 points, 4-for-6 from the field. McCree also has 7 rebounds, 6 defensive, 1 offensive, and Derek Jean has taken the top spot in assists. Bracey, Boykins, Jean, Sherman, McCree, the usual starting lineup. Both Boykins and McCree have 10 points. Bracey's got 1, a free throw. Yeah. Derek Jean with 1.
It looks like
1.
McCree had a straight 8 straight points at one point, so he was really getting it going.
He finally got sick of it. But before we sign off for the week, let's take a little bit of a look at the other Conference USA bowls going on, as this Saturday, actually, is the kickoff of bowl season with Houston, San Diego State on Saturday at 2:30. The first game features a Conference USA team, UTSA 6-6, going up against New Mexico in the New Mexico Bowl Saturday at 1 o'clock. And then that night, the second Conference USA team to play on the opening day of bowl season, Southern Miss, takes on ULL in the Superdome in New Orleans. I mean, out of both those games, I mean, UTSA has done really well to get to the point that they're at right now. But honestly, I'm a little bit more intrigued by Southern Miss ULL. I don't know. I mean, that might just be me. But Nick Mullins being back and the way that they played against Tech, on Reddit, the college football community on there, I looked at it and I found an article on Nick Mullins and how his story and where he's come from. He essentially is Southern Miss.
Oh yeah, because
they wouldn't be where they are without him, and that's in both sense of the word. They wouldn't be bowl eligible if he hadn't come back from injury.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they wouldn't be 6-6 if he had gotten hurt in the middle of the season like he did.
Well, and 2 years ago when Tech won in Hattiesburg, you know, I think he was the backup, but he came in and played really well. And I expect them to take a step backwards with him gone.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But, you know, of course, Tech fans are like, yeah, you know, hopefully.
Hopefully.
You know, you don't want to see that guy anymore. But, yeah, I like both of those matchups. And to me, the beginning of each season, I'm looking at all the non-conference matchups, you know, in weeks 1, 2, 3, and 4. You know, who are Conference USA teams playing, especially when they play Mountain West teams and American teams and Sun Belt teams, because you want Tech or even Mac, when you get the occasional Mac matchup, you know, how is Conference USA stacking up against the other Group of Five conferences? And especially in those rivalry games, you know, UTEP's always scheduling New Mexico and New Mexico State, you know. So in this matchup, San Antonio's playing New Mexico out there on their home field. Can they get that win? Can Southern Miss get the win? You know, Louisiana Tech has done a good job the last couple of years playing against Arkansas State in the bowl game or the Cajuns on the regular season. You know, can Southern Miss keep that streak going, beating teams from, you know, the Sun Belt? Can San Antonio beat a team from the Mountain West? So, to me, it's all about, you know, just trying to – how do you stack up against the other conferences? And bowl games is a great way to do it.
One of the best matchups for a Conference USA team, of course, you have to go to Western Kentucky. The Conference USA champions at 10-3 taking on Memphis in the Boca Raton Bowl at FAU Stadium. Mike White, 4,027 yards on the season and 34 touchdowns. Anthony Wales, 202 carries, 1,300 yards and 24 touchdowns. And Taywan Taylor, one of Western Kentucky's two great receivers, has 1,500 yards and 16 touchdowns on the season. Really high-scoring offense, but you have to wonder, is Memphis a good match there? Is it going to be another really high scoring game, or will Western Kentucky not exactly know how to fare now that they're playing a defense that's better than Tech or any of the other Conference USA teams that they've had to come up against.
Well, and you mentioned Mike White. You know, a lot of people were surprised. You know, 6 days ago, this happened right after our show last week. Mike White was not named Offensive Player of the Year. It was Brian Higgins. And then the Coach of the Year was Skip Holtz. And a lot of the Old Dominion fans were like, hey, what about our guy? We were picked at the bottom of the conference. And then Carlos Henderson was named Offensive Player of the Year. So Tech swept those awards. You mentioned Taylor. You mentioned Mike White. You know, those guys won the conference. But Tech brought home all the awards, it seemed like.
Maybe playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And you bring up Old Dominion, David Washington, 2,600 yards, 28 touchdowns for Old Dominion. They will be same day as Louisiana Tech. That Friday, the 23rd, will be taking on Eastern Michigan in the Popeyes Bahama Bowl. And back to that Boca Raton Bowl, the over-under is currently sitting at 80. Seems wow. about right. Western Kentucky's favored by 4.5. Old Dominion is also favored by 4.5. Their over-under is at 63.5. Then, of course, you come to Louisiana Tech Navy. We'll talk about that more next week as Bowl Week will be upon us. And then closing out Conference USA's bowl schedule, Middle Tennessee essentially at Hawaii in Aloha Stadium.
Another road game, just like New Mexico, when you're playing that team on their home field. Well, we'll be back next week. We'll talk almost exclusively about the bowl game. We will obviously talk about basketball. The Duncan Dogs are currently at halftime leading Prairie View 32-28. I'm Jason Jones, here for Matt Valcho and John Tabor. Join us next week on Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7.
Listen for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors, every Tuesday from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Go deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting with your host, Jonathan Ford. Also brought to you by National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Brennan Dodge, Dairy Queen, Delta Broadband, Walpole Tire, and Fairway Carts. Thanks for listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7.